This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, SoftBank's Masa Yossi-san. Billionaire Masa-san sits down with our own Andrew Ross Sorkin after a rebound year of impressive gains.
Well, you know, we had a good outcome because of many lucky opportunities.
The man who poured billions into and made billions out of Alibaba, Uber, Slack, and DoorDash addresses his less wise bets.
You know, we had WeWork issues, we had Greensill, we had Capterra, you know, we have many bad investments we made.
Where the SoftBank leader invested and where he missed out.
Okay, so hold on. So who do you think you missed?
Yeah. So Airbnb, Snowflake, and you know, several other companies that we should have invested. We were looking to invest, and I was not smart enough.
Plus, he's bankrolled global innovation for years, but tech stocks are stumbling. Masa-san's market perspective.
It's not the change in the company's performance. The fundamentals is very strong. Our companies are all growing. Tech companies are all growing. They have a record high profitability and so on.
That big interview, but first, the talk of the town, Tesla's Bitcoin reversal. It's Thursday, May 13th, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
First up today on the podcast, prices everywhere going up. Wednesday's consumer price index showed hotter than expected inflation and triggered a big sell-off in the stock market. Inflation in April accelerated at its fastest pace in more than 12 years as the U.S. economic recovery really kicked into gear. Energy prices overall jumped 25% from a year earlier, including a nearly 50% increase for gasoline and more than 37% for fuel oil. Price surges for consumer products have come amid supply bottlenecks as well, if you've been ordering stuff for your home and seeing a delay. This is caused by a number of factors. Production issues with all the semiconductors, those microchips powering everything from your smartphone to your car, as well as issues like the March blockage of the Suez Canal and the soaring demand for a lot of commodities. And it's all got Wall Street worried.
Markets, wow, they went on a wild ride this week. The Dow off almost 700 points yesterday for a loss of about 2%. The S&P was down by 2.1%, and the NASDAQ got hit the hardest. It was down by 2.7%. By the way, guys, this is the worst week for stocks that we've seen in 6 months. And by the way, it's only Thursday morning. You got to check this out. Just looking at where we've been over the last 6 months. In fact, the Dow and the S&P right now are only a little more than 4% from their all-time high. The NASDAQ is a little worse. It's just over 8% from its record high. But I think you need to be looking at where these stocks have moved and how far we've come to kind of keep a little bit of perspective on some of this. If you're looking at individual stocks, though, it's a little worse for some of those high flyers in particular. In fact, for the S&P 500, 32% of the S&P 500 individual stocks are 10% or more below their 52-week highs. If you're looking at the biggest drawdowns, it'd be Viacom, CBS, Discovery, Enphase Energy, companies like Twitter and Etsy. Again, some of the high flyers that really saw big gains that have been giving them back. Worth pointing out that it's not just the stock market that's paying attention to this. Bonds also kind of sitting up and taking notice yesterday as we saw the inflation numbers come in much hotter than expected. The 10-year actually all the way up this morning at 1.7%. So when we got that first knee-jerk reaction, we were saying no reaction in the bond market, maybe nothing's going to be happening. But we are looking at this 1.7%. And remember, just Friday of last week, we saw the 10-year fall below 1.5%. So that's a pretty significant move.
Bitcoin falling sharply. People have different closes for what they look at, but I've got figures that show it down about 14%. We're already factoring in some of the selling yesterday to get it down just 8, but it was at 57 or 58,000, and it went as low as 46,000. Went as low as 46, bounced now back to 49 and change after Tesla CEO Elon Musk tweeted that the electric vehicle maker would suspend car purchases using Bitcoin. He said, we're concerned about rapidly increasing the use of fossil fuels for Bitcoin mining and transactions, especially coal, which is used to power the grid that can electrify the cars. And worse emissions of any fuel. He also said Tesla would not be selling any Bitcoin, and they intend to use it for transactions as soon as mining becomes more sustainable. He also said Tesla is looking at other cryptocurrencies that use less than 1% of Bitcoin's energy per transaction. But following Musk's announcement, Dallas Mavericks owner Mark Cuban said the team would continue to accept Bitcoin, Ether, and Dogecoin because, in his words, we know that replacing gold as a store of value will help the environment, which is a totally different take on everything. I have thought, you know, my take on this is, guys, is Elon's whole deal is climate change and responding to it and electric vehicles and ostensibly helping to solve that problem. So just messing around with cryptocurrencies, it's kind of fun for him and kind of cool. It's not that different than dancing when he's doing stuff or going on Saturday Night Live. But when push comes to shove, his bread is buttered by electrifying cars and, as I say, ostensibly solving climate change. Whether you like rare earth mining, which is dirty as hell and pollutes, you know, water, or lithium mining, or any of the other concerns, just on a PR basis, it doesn't look good for him to be pushing Bitcoin as, you know, the savior of climate change.
To me,
but
the bigger
just
question.
This out.
What's that?
Well,
yeah, I don't know. That's what I don't understand. Did he just figure it out? I mean, he goes all the way to Dogecoin. He goes all the way out there, and now he's, you know, and they're not taking it off the balance sheet of the company. And so he says that, so the balance sheet of the company suddenly goes down 14%. He loses. I don't know.
This is less about Elon, though, and more about what's really happening with Bitcoin and whether there are speculators here or whether there are gamblers here. I mean, when you can see somebody make comments like this, and it either drives the price up or drives it down so rapidly, that just tells you that this is not a settled market.
Well, it's not stable enough to be currency to buy coins with already, which we already knew.
The bigger question long term is, to me, if you were a Bitcoin believer, you had to also believe that big institutions were ultimately going to buy Bitcoin, right? That it was not just going to be a retail audience.
Right.
And so if Elon Musk, who is Mr. ESG, is saying it's no good, and you're right, he should not. I mean, this is not new information. We've been talking about it on the air. I've written columns about the climate problem with Bitcoin, and you can compare it to gold and all sorts of things. But I don't think there's a question in a million years that Bitcoin is one of the most inefficient transaction tools available. Full stop, period, end of discussion. I don't even think there's a debate about that. Though I'm sure we will have people who will come on and try to tell us that. Having said that, how are big institutions going to buy Bitcoin? I mean, that's the fundamental question. In the future, it is very possible that Bitcoin will be powered by solar and wind and all sorts of things. So maybe several years from now, that'll be the case. But at least for now, in the immediate future, if not for the next decade, it won't be. But then again, you can say the hypocrisy is
nothing is powered by solar and wind right now.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is you go look at what you look at the factories that he's putting together in China, in Shanghai, or in other places, or even in the United States. But part of what he would argue is it's
don't blame Bitcoin for energy use. It's the entire world runs on fossil fuels.
No. The inefficiency of Bitcoin as a transaction medium. If you were going to start a transaction medium, this is the last one you would start if you were thinking about how much energy it takes to literally move money. It's insane.
If you were going to try to go to work, the last thing you'd ever do is go in an internal combustion engine if you really believe in all this hype. When do you think stopping the energy will stop the hurricanes, Andrew? Pretty soon? Or when will that pay off with China and India?
I knew
pumping?
That we'd eventually get into a debate about whether there's
no,
climate
we don't
change.
Have to.
But I don't
we
think...
just had the, you know, when do we see the benefits of this? When do the hurricanes slow down and we don't have any more heat waves and stuff? Is that 20 years, 50 years? When do you think we see that progress?
Look, I'm not the scientist.
I just want to give you
a statistic for you. One Bitcoin transaction has the same carbon footprint as 735,121,000 Visa transactions or 55,000 hours of watching YouTube. So you could watch YouTube for 55,000 hours. Or you can make one Bitcoin transaction.
So you just buy carbon offsets like Bill Gates, and everything's fine. Just buy the carbon offsets, and it's gone. And it's fine. And we're good. And you're clean, and you can, you know, go around and lecture in your jet on stopping this. Just buy some carbon offsets. It's simple. It's simple. It all works.
Next on Squawk Pod, the Unicorn Hunter. SoftBank's founder and CEO Masa-san on his biggest investing windfalls, his biggest losses, and what one of Japan's richest people says about the upcoming Tokyo Olympics.
I am very much afraid of having Olympics that are not just about the Japan, but for the many countries. They're having a still big, tough situation. I don't know how they can support the sending athlete.
This is Squawk Pod. Today on our podcast, Andrew Ross Sorkin's interview with Masayoshi Son. Now, if you don't know Masa-san, let's catch you up. He's a Japanese billionaire, an investor, an entrepreneur, the founder and CEO of tech giant SoftBank. In many ways, SoftBank has bankrolled much of the world's tech innovation in the recent past. At Masa-san's direction, the investing arm of SoftBank, it's called the Vision Fund, has poured billions into American giants like Uber, Slack, and DoorDash, and international tech giants like Alibaba and Asia's ride-sharing behemoths Didi and Grab. SoftBank also has an ownership stake in TikTok parent ByteDance. Famously, or perhaps infamously, when you consider how it all turned out, Masa-san made an enormous bet on WeWork. After the messy meltdown of that co-working company, the failed IPO in 2019, 90% decrease in its valuation, SoftBank Vision Fund posted an annual loss of nearly $18 billion. Now, the $100 billion fund didn't blame all of its losses on WeWork, but the whole incident and SoftBank's attempt to rescue it was embarrassing. Even Masa-san admitted it last year.
We made a lot of loss in the investment in WeWork, billions of dollars, and that is my mistake, okay?
Now, 1 year after posting those unprecedented losses, SoftBank has made quite the comeback. It generated almost $46 billion in annual profit, benefiting from some of its portfolio companies' public debuts. This is the largest ever profit for a Japanese company. To give you some perspective, it's on par with the likes of Berkshire Hathaway, Microsoft, and Alphabet.
Masa?
Yeah?
It's so good to see you.
Andrew sat down with Masa-san via Zoom on Wednesday night, as you'll hear.
I don't see you.
You just hear me.
Yes, I can hear you.
On our TV broadcast this morning, he shared the highlights of that conversation and digested the interview with Becky Quick and Joe Kernan.
Well, look, thank you for doing this. Let me just ask the control room guys if we can start. Can we start, guys?
Here's Andrew with SoftBank's Masa-san.
What an unbelievable year. When you began this year, tell me about the feelings of what the year felt like for you when it started and when it ended.
Just exactly 12 months ago, it was just the beginning of COVID-19. People were worried. The world was worried. I was worried. And we had to take a very, the cautious actions and in a defensive mode. We announced the, $45 billion the monetization, liquidity, because the cash is a king in that kind of crisis mode. And we did a very strong move for the defensive mode. So we had enough cash, and with that cash, we kept on investing into the unicorns for the AI. And it turned out to be pretty good at the end.
Did you ever think, if we had had this conversation literally a year ago, though, did you ever think that the returns would look as spectacular as they have?
No, it's been, a good result. I had a long-term confidence, but no visibility for the short term. And so it's good to have a great outcome.
It's a remarkable outcome. And one of the things that you've talked about is the fact that you want to make sure this isn't a one-off outcome, that this isn't something that just happens once and is done. And so the question is, how do you look at a year like this and try to make it sustainable?
Yeah, well, we had a good outcome because of many lucky opportunities, but I want to make it an ecosystem so that we can repeat. So about a year ago, we had maybe 100 companies of our unicorns in our group. Now we have 220 companies. So between Vision Fund 1 and 2 and LATAM Fund, we had 14 IPOs or exit the last 12 months. 1 year before that, we had 8. But this year, we're going to have so many more because we now have a bigger base of companies, and the companies are getting more mature to get ready for IPO. So I want to create an ecosystem where we don't have just a few lucky shots. We would have a multiple of companies going for IPOs.
And given everything that happened in the last year, I asked Masa-san about the biggest lessons that he had learned and what he's expecting.
We had WeWork issues. We had GreenSale. We had Katera. We have many bad investments we made. I hope the WeWork is turning around now and becoming a visibility with profitability sometime in the next several quarters. So many regrets of bad investment, but actually more regrets in missing great companies' investment. So that is even bigger regrets.
Okay, so hold on. So who do you think you missed? I know we've had conversations before about Jeff Bezos and Amazon and things like that, but is there more recent misses? Are there companies that you wish you had invested in even the last couple of years?
Yeah. So Airbnb, Snowflake, and several other companies that we should have invested. We were looking to invest, and I was not smart enough.
When you look back and say to yourself, okay, Airbnb, I didn't see it. What do you see now that you think you should have seen, and are there lessons in that?
Well, I saw that they are a pretty good company, a great business model, great time, and so on. I thought the price was a little too expensive. We were discussing to invest, but I was not smart enough to accept the price tag that they had a couple of years ago. So lots of regrets, banging heads.
How much do you think typically about price as an investor? Is it usually a price issue for you, or is it usually just a company issue? Meaning you love the company, and not that you'll pay any price, but that, you know, because you have such a long-term view, you'll take the bet.
Most of the misses that we did is a price issue. We thought it was too expensive because the... As you can understand, most of the company that we are investing is still losing money. Okay.
Right.
So you have to have a pretty long view of how the company would really evolve. And you have to imagine and so on. Sometimes when you imagine and the result would be bad result, as we have experienced, but sometimes you have to be brave enough to imagine, more on the positive side.
I was fascinated by that answer only because I've never heard him talk about missing Airbnb or Snowflake or others and actually missing because of the price. I think there's actually always been a view that he's been willing to take a bet almost irrespective of the price. Meantime, when I spoke to Masa-san last fall at the DealBook conference, we were all envying what seemed like Japan's very good handling of the pandemic. But now the tables, of course, have turned. Japan is now envious of the United States and its vaccination rollout. And I asked Masa-san about the Olympics that are supposed to take place this summer, but frankly, whether they should happen. Here's what he had to say.
I am very much afraid of having Olympics. There are not just about Japan, but for the many countries, they're having a still big tough situation. I don't know how how they can support sending athlete.
He's a worker.
It's interesting what he said about the Olympics.
Yes.
I mean, it feels to me like the Olympics are coming one way or another, that they've figured out what they think is a safe bubble, that they're going to be able to, they think, pull it off by making sure everybody's vaccinating, keeping everybody there, not letting them out. Do you get the sense that he's really trying to push something that would change it?
Well, I get the sense that if you look at the polling in Tokyo right now, it's somewhere between 65% and 80% of the citizens of Japan don't want the Olympics to take place this summer. It is so overwhelming how much the people in Japan just think this is a terrible idea. And so to have what is the most influential and wealthiest and biggest businessman in Japan, I think for the first time now, come on television and effectively say we shouldn't be doing this, I think could be a powerful statement to the government there. It's worth noting the president of the IOC was supposed to make a trip to Tokyo just this week, I believe, or maybe within the last week now, and ended up deciding that he couldn't go because of the challenges. I mean, the rates there are unfortunately very, very high. And so I think there's going to be a lot of questions over the next several weeks about which way this ultimately goes. Clearly, the IOC wants to do it. The Prime Minister of Japan wants to do it, and they are making plans. But we will see what that ultimately looks like in the end.
Not great hearing about the seven Yankees that all were vaccinated.
Well, we got to have a conversation about that.
It's J&J, right?
We have to have
a
conversation about that.
It's J&J, right? So J&J was not 95%, but still, it's like, wait a minute.
Sure, but to have seven people, I mean, statistically, that it almost makes no
invariance,
sense. You have to think that they weren't.
You bring people from all over the world, and who knows what you're bringing in variants. I don't want to sound, once again, I don't want to sound like an alarmist, but this is all uncharted, and we're not done yet, maybe.
Coming up, what a relief. Inflation concerns be gone. Well, at least for SoftBank billionaire Masa-san.
No, again, as I said, I don't care about the interest rate myself. It's just the rest of the market who worry about it. I'm a long-term investor.
More on Squawk Pod right after this. Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. And today, we're bringing you our exclusive conversation with SoftBank CEO and Japanese billionaire investor Masa-san. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
1 year after posting unprecedented losses, SoftBank has made a record comeback. It generated nearly $46 billion in annual profits, the most ever for a Japanese company, and on par with the likes of Berkshire Hathaway, Apple, Microsoft, and Alphabet. I spoke with SoftBank CEO Masa-san about those results and whether he had any regrets, though, about trying to actually raise cash this year, given how well he did, and whether he still thinks cash is king.
We did the share buyback. We continued more investment into unicorns. I still want to continue to invest. So cash is always nice to have. We have enough cash of our own, so we don't need to raise external investors to our Vision Fund. Our own cash is sufficient now.
One of SoftBank's strategies, though, this year was to invest in some very liquid companies, typically things he hasn't done before. So he invested in Amazon and Facebook. And I asked Masa-san what led him to do this.
Well, we had enough liquidity. We did not have enough investment. And we had excess cash, better than sitting in the bank. We should utilize. I have been a big believer, and I am still a big believer of those high-tech big names are going to continue to grow. So just excess cash management.
Do you have any concern? One of the big questions in the United States is whether these companies are going to get broken up by regulators because they've become so big. And there are smaller companies, maybe even some in your own portfolio, that have said that some of these bigger companies have made it very difficult for them to grow and the like. Do you agree with that?
Well, no, not that much. Those big companies, of course, have to behave within the reasonable range, but they are, you know, reasonable companies in my view. And the more startup companies has their own opportunities, lots of opportunities without making complaints that much.
So you're, I mean, the reason I ask is there's some companies that say, look, it's unfair for, you know, Apple to charge 30% at its app store. It's unfair for Amazon to be competing with us at, on one end, but also selling our product on the other.
Well, if they are unhappy, they should do it themselves. If they are happy, they should join. It's they don't have to follow. So I think it's not that bad. But, you know, of course, as a big platformer, they should always listen to the other participants if they want to have a longer term, even bigger growth.
So that's actually very interesting. So if you were Apple, what would you do? Because they are a big platform. They've got a lot of developers on the platform, but then there are some developers that are upset about how things are going.
Well, Apple is a good friend of mine. It's difficult for me to say.
I know.
So, I think we have lots of business with them. But look, you know, seriously, they have created a great platform, and, you know, they are pretty open to about their policies. There are alternative opportunities with Android and so on. But if they have anything to say, they should continue to discuss.
And of course, Alibaba is one of Masayoshi's greatest investments. I asked SoftBank CEO whether he's talked to his old friend Jack Ma recently, who has been caught up in all sorts of controversy and conspiracies about whether the Chinese government has effectively pushed him out of that company.
I always talk. We have hobbies that we have a common interest, and you know, he's a good friend of mine. You know, talking almost every week.
There's been a lot of concern about him. Should we be concerned about him?
No, I don't think so. He's healthy. He's having a good life, and I think he's retired from the day-to-day operation. He's still a big shareholder, so of course I think he still loves the company. But the daily operations are being done by Daniel and the management and employees.
Right.
So it's continuing to grow.
I asked SoftBank CEO Masayoshi though about the recent declines in tech stocks, as well as what seems to be a rotation away from some of the high growth names.
I think it's just a volatility based on the people's view on long-term interest. And as some inflation and interest rate may go up, it's not the change in the company's performance. The fundamentals is very strong. Our companies are all growing. Tech companies are all growing. They have a record high profitability and so on. It's just that the people's view on the long-term interest rate and just a cyclical thing. It's no fundamental change.
I asked Masa what he thinks is going to happen, though, with interest rates over time.
I think, you know, people market is saying, the interest rate may go up. I don't know how much it will go up, but when that kind of moment happens, that's always the best time to make more investment because you can buy cheaper. And but we are at the beginning of the technology revolution, especially the AI that we are in. It's just the beginning. So I am very, very hopeful that we can make great investment in this kind of environment.
Are you, though, worried about inflation? Are you seeing signs of fragility in this marketplace right now?
Well, I don't know. I don't know enough about inflation or interest rate. That's not my expertise. My expertise is technology.
But you've lived, by the way, in a country, by the way, that has been dealing with interest rates in a very unique way, and has, there's been big implications over the years. Are there lessons from that?
No, again, as I said, I don't care about the interest rate myself. It's just the rest right. of the rest of the market who worry about it. I'm a long-term investor.
Refreshing view. He doesn't care about interest rates. When I spoke with Masa Sung last fall, he said he had sold Bitcoin because he couldn't stand watching it go up and down. I asked him whether he had changed his view.
I don't have the view yet about the good or bad or hype or reasonable. I don't know. But there are enough number of population who is trading the cryptocurrency of many different brands. And so if there are enough number of people buying and selling like gold or diamond, I shouldn't be criticizing any people's interest as long as they are not doing something unfair. So I don't know, you know, I don't want to criticize. I am not the investor yet. I had once I bought it myself to just to get to know, and I sold. But maybe I'm the dumb guy who did not understand. I don't know. I'm open to any learning.
Masa, it is so good to see you. I appreciate you doing this, and I look forward to seeing you, hopefully in person, sooner than later.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Have a great day.
And that's Squawk Pod for today. Thanks for listening to our exclusive with Masa Sung. Tell us what you think anytime on Twitter at Squawk CNBC or write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern. Subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you listen. Tell a friend to subscribe, too. And we'll meet you back here tomorrow.